Welcome back everyone to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing and smashing that thumbs up. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. A shout out to my patrons and my channel members. Welcome to the Dark Forest. Daniel Truman was an older guy I used to work with. All things considered, he was a decent person, though he was one of those folks who had a story for about any occasion. Almost anything that anyone else may have experienced, he had a tale to top it. He could be annoying at times, but I don't believe that he meant any harm. Perhaps he was only craving being in the spotlight for a while, which could potentially have been momentarily eased by making himself the center of attention for a time. Regardless of his reasons, little to nobody actually believed his supposed recollections, as the majority of them sounded to be quite fictional. Oftentimes, he would successfully gain the respect of the new hires, or even some who have worked there for a while, who may not be all that familiar with him and his ways. Though he could tend to spin a well-crafted yarn, I would feel my eyes rolling when he would take it upon himself to repeat the same tales over and over again, depending on his respective audience at the time. He was getting up in years, so it could not be denied and somewhat impressive that he could recite each one verbatim, whether he had told it one day before or half a decade ago. Still, I highly doubted that he truly experienced everything from an attempted bank robbery with no more than his experience in martial arts to guide his actions, to witness an extraterrestrial ship crashing down on Roswell. I can't say I don't have a fondness for this mad old bastard, though. Sure, his ways would quickly get under my skin when I was simply not in the mood for his endless rambling, but I would just sneak away when I wasn't feeling it. More often than not, I would humor him with the mandatory one-word replies, or the occasional "ohs" and "ah," as his tales would reach their climax. I may even grant him an enthusiastic "holy shit," if I was in the mood to butter his popcorn a bit. He was harmless, really, and he would get a glint in his eye like a kid on Christmas morning when any of us would eat up the crap he was attempting to feed us. It wasn't until the day I returned to work after a 2-week sabbatical due to my father's passing, when he told me a story I actually believed, and still do to this day. On any normal day, he would practically perform his tales, darting his eyes between each person in the room, gesturing with his hands to increase the intensity, while dramatically pausing in between raising and lowering the tone of his voice to fit the subject matter. But not this one. On this occasion, he didn't so much as glance in my direction when he spoke in an almost monotone voice. Another unique component to this one was that he would actually pause when anyone entered the office. Generally, he would backtrack to catch the new audience member up to speed, but it would seem like this one was for me, and me alone. I wasn't exactly in the best mindset when I arrived back to work that day. Though my father had battled cancer for the better part of 3 years, it was still a shock when he finally lost the fight. I had always been close to my parents, so I had spent the majority of those 14 days off the job caring for my mother, while taking little time to allow myself to face my own grief. She was slowly coming back to herself, but she had suffered almost as much as her husband over these past years. Perhaps more so. In some ways, she was actually relieved that the fight was over, but she was still without her soulmate, regardless of the fact he would no longer have to suffer. My fellow employees from the previous shift were still in the office when I arrived. Each gave me their sympathies, while making the token inquiries as to how I was holding up and such, but I wanted little more than to be left alone. Although I appreciated the well wishes and condolences, I was not in the mood to talk about it. After they filtered out, leaving me alone with Truman, I just headed to my desk, keeping my head lowered in an attempt to convey how much I didn't really want to talk about things. For the first few hours, he respected my need for silence. It wasn't until I returned from the bathroom break that he began to speak. I was just 12 when I lost my pop. I felt my neck tense up, instantly feeling anger pulse throughout my veins. Surely, he didn't need to feel the need to one me up on something like this, I thought, while keeping my back turned to the man in the effort to encourage him to seize his desire to get a win on something like this. I know you're hurting, kid. Just tell me to shut the hell up if you don't want to hear me ramble on. There was something sincere in his voice, something compassionate and genuine I had never heard from him. I turned my chair around to face the man, only to find he still had his back to me. Though I truly had no desire to hear some far-fetched yarn, perhaps concerning how his youthful frame was far too weak to successfully wrestle the alligator into submission, as it chewed on his daddy's throat, his tone and mannerisms were far from the norm. I found myself growing quite curious as to what he had to say. "Ramble away," I said with a very false and forced chuckle. He returned an equally laugh, before he began to speak again. The story he shared with me that day had stayed with me these past few years. A tale I would like to share with you now, should you have interest in hearing it. I will try to my best of my ability to recount the words as he had spoke them, though I cannot promise it'll be 100% to the letter. Still, I will not exaggerate, nor will I inflate his words to anything more grotesque than they were. The following is the last story Daniel Truman ever shared with me. It was a small town I lived in with my folks back then, far smaller than this one. Little place called Rimrose Fall, couple of 100 miles to the south of here. Wasn't nothing special. But I had never been nowhere else when I was young. Mama had some ailments ain't no need of speaking of, but she'd have need of going into the city every few weeks or so to see some better doctors than the one that we had back home. My pappy had been promising to take me fishing for the last month or so, but it'd been hard to find the time. Between Mama and his work, we'd go from time to time, but it was a good drive to get to the lake he favored, so he always would have to plan it out pretty good. I'd ask him sometimes, why couldn't we just head up to Boulder Creek, being that it was just a couple of miles from where we lived, but he'd just tell me that we had no business going there. He said that there were some local fishermen types that didn't take too kindly to others taking up their spot, though I had never seen no one else there when we passed by in Pappy's truck. He wouldn't hear it, though. Made me swear I'd never think about going out there, but I didn't understand at the time. You know how it is when you're that age, got everything figured out by then, and can't nobody tell you otherwise. That Thursday, May 16th, 1968, Pop set up where he was going to spend the whole day with me. He was going to take off work and said we'd go fishing, and just have a good old time, just the two of us. He was even going to let me skip out of going to the schoolhouse, just so we could have a little father-son time in. I was plumb thrilled, and it was all that I thought about for the next 2 weeks that went by after he told me. Mama had seen her doctor the week before the 16th, so she should have been good for a while when we were gone. Of course, her situation was unpredictable, so we got to that Thursday and she took a turn. Pappy didn't have no choice but to take her back to the city. He told me that he was sorry, and I could tell that he meant it, on account of he was looking forward to catching some fish, too. Still, I can't say I wasn't none too thrilled about how it turned out. I didn't pitch a fit or nothing, but I didn't exactly put on an understanding face, neither. Pop told me I didn't have to come with them to see the doctor, even though I'd already taken the day off of school. But he promised that we'd take that trip soon, just had to prioritize the important things. He could tell I was upset, but I didn't take no measures to convince him or Mama otherwise. I know it wasn't her fault, and I knew she was in bad shape when she took a turn, but I must have come off like a damn brat at the time. Pop looked plumb sad when he helped Mama to the truck, and I'm sure I could have made him feel better if I'd made some sort of effort, but I didn't. Still feel bad for this to this day, but I know I was a kid. Doesn't make it no better, though. I was still mopping around the house a good hour after they took off. It had been some time since the last time I'd gone fishing, so when I looked back at the tackle box we had already set out by the front door, I just about had my mind made up before it even registered. Boulder Creek was only a ways from my house, and if I could load the box and fishing pole onto my bike, I could be there and back before anyone was wiser. I knew my folks would likely not be back until after sundown, so I could surely catch a few and still be back before they knew it. I reckon I was about as stubborn as a mule, and hard-headed as an ox, so I didn't care that Pappy had made me promise never to go there. I figured he just didn't trust me enough to be able to get around all that wild brush and such out there without hurting myself, so he made some stuff up to keep me from going. I strapped the tackle box down to the back of my bike with some old belts that I had grown out of, and used some twine to tie the fishing pole to sling over my shoulder. Even strapped a bowie knife I'd gotten for Christmas to my belt, just in case I had to scare off some critters or something. It was a bit awkward to ride with the box and rod, but it was nothing I couldn't deal with. The trail was rough, and I damn near tipped over on the lumpier parts. But before I knew it, I was clearing the trees that surrounded the creek. I had never seen it up close before, only from the road up the hill. It sure was pretty. It was almost a perfect circle, with thin streams branching off here and there. In the middle, there was a small mound of dirt, with a giant rock sticking out of it. I suppose that's how it's got the name Boulder Creek. Though it might be unoriginal, given the island made of stone, the water looked as clear as if you had just poured it from a jug, and I could see the fish zigging and zagging under the surface. Weren't no wild underbrush neither. I couldn't see no bottom to the lake, but the water was clear as far as the youthful eye could see. Still, I wasn't the best swimmer, so I wasn't going to let myself get too close to it or nothing. I wasn't that curious to see how deep it went. When I got to unloading the tackle box, pulling the twine from the rod, and baiting the hook, I kept looking around for any sign of the locals Pap warned me about. Given this was only a short ways from the house, I didn't see no reason why I couldn't be considered a local. But I still didn't see no sign of anyone. The grass was overgrown, in between patches of flat dirt and rocks, and it didn't look as if nobody had been out this way in weeks at least. There wasn't no bent blades or footprints. Hell, I couldn't even hear no sign of wildlife nearby. Kept the fish under the water. Weren't no crickets chirping or squirrels running up and down the trees? No birds flapping around the woods or up in the sky above me? It was kind of peaceful. But a bit eerie, too. Everything being so quiet, aside from me. Still, I went ahead with what I went there for and casted my line out into the lake. I could see the fish scatter as soon as the hook dropped in on them, so I just took a seat on the tackle box and stayed still as a deer in headlights. I figured they'd gather back up once they felt that it wasn't nothing to be scared of. I was going to toss back whatever I caught anyways. Couldn't go bringing anything back to the house when I was done. I didn't want Pop to know I disobeyed him. He was never one to tan my hide unless I really had it coming, but I figured this would have me a good whooping on account that he had made me promise and all. My boots were getting good and muddy too, so I figured I'd have to clean them up when I got back, or just tell him that I was playing around outside. Surely, he'd have no reason to suspect otherwise. When I finally got my first bite, I swear I had to wrestle that sumbitch for a good 10 minutes straight. When I reeled her in, she had to be a good 6 pounds at least, maybe a foot and a half long too. That might be no more than average for some, but it was the biggest sucker I had ever seen at that age. After I had to let it go, I didn't have much luck. Biggest I reeled in after that was maybe a pound or two. But I pulled a good 5 or 6 from that lake before the sun started to sink. I knew I had to be getting back, but I wished I could have told Pappy about how many I'd caught. I just knew if I could convince him to come out, we could have supper for a month. Still, I wasn't about to confess what I did, what he said not to. After I got the tackle box strapped back down and I was tying up the twine to the back of the fishing pole, I heard a whimpering coming from nearby. It had been so damn quiet, I had taken to keeping my breathing shallow and damn near tiptoeing around. You know how it is. Even though you have no reason to be quiet, you kind of act like it when there ain't no sounds around other than you. That's why the sound damn near caused my heart to skip. Like I said, the grass was grown out pretty tall, and nothing had been cut down or maintained, so I couldn't see nothing from where the whimpering was coming from, even though it sounded like it was just some yards behind me. Being as curious as any kid that age, I had to see what was causing it. The closer I got, the more it sounded like another kid crying. I hadn't seen no one else the whole time I had been there, but I hadn't looked around much either. It scared me something awful to think that there might be someone out here hurt or passed out while I was having a good old time, none the wiser. Could be they just started to come too as I was getting ready to set off back home. All these things were going through my head the closer I got. Wasn't till I got right to where the whimpering was coming from that it stopped. I swatted at the tall grass and was cutting my eyes this way and that, but weren't no sounds no more but me. Soon as I shrugged the whole thing off and made to head back to my bike, I noticed I couldn't lift my legs no more. I looked down, pushing the grass away so that I could see my feet, to see some light shining from beneath me. Damn near pissed my pants when I saw the shadowy hands gripping around my shoes, too. There must have been 5 or 6 of them, just tiny little hands gripping onto my feet and ankles. I hollered out as loud as I could while I was pulling my legs trying to break free of the tight-gripped fingers, but I couldn't so much as yank my feet out of my shoes. I didn't stop screaming out with every bit of my lungs, even when the hands pulled me down into the other place. It didn't even feel like I went through the grass and dirt, as much as there wasn't no ground beneath my feet for a minute. Knocked myself out cold when I hit the other ground that was beneath the one I was on before. Soon as I come to, I start hollering again. I didn't know if I was still asleep and dreaming, or if the giant shadow man who stood over me was real. He was bigger than anything I had seen before, with bright red glowing eyes. That was the only thing that I could make out on him, on the account of the rest being no more than a shadow. I didn't see no sign of the little ones whose hands had pulled me through from up top, just the big old thing staring at me. I was still whimpering some, even after my yells gave out. The thing still looked down on me, tilting its head from one side to the other, but I don't think he was actually the one making the other sounds I was hearing. It was some sort of clicking or snapping in a way. It was dark and kind of foggy all around me, but I could still make out a little. The walls almost looked like they were wood, but the grains didn't flow like no wood I had ever seen. It's not easy to explain, but things wasn't shaped like things are here, you know? It looked like there was 4 walls, but also as if there was more. I couldn't see no sort of ceiling, and the ground I was laying on didn't feel like nothing natural or man-made. The clicking sounds was all around me, and no matter where I turned my head, I couldn't see where it was coming from, even though it sounded like it was right beside me. As soon as the shadow thing wrapped its hand around both my legs and lifted me from the floor, my bladder couldn't hold back no more. The thing had been 10 times my height at the time. I was kind of small for my age, but I hadn't even seen nothing this big. While I dangled in front of the shadow man's red eyes, I could make out more of its features, though that ain't saying much. It had jet black skin and a sort of plain face. Normal enough nose and mouth and all, but when it licked its lips, when it stared me down, I could see that even its tongue and teeth were black. It was like looking at a negative of a picture or something. On top of that, from up high where I was hanging, I could make out more of what stood under me. This likely sounds even crazier than the 20-foot shadow man, but I swear to the good Lord they looked like man-sized praying mantises. They were hidden behind that odd haze that made the one that held me look like nothing more than a shadow at first, so it was hard to focus my eyes on them. Could be that they were nothing more than some mean folk in costumes, but they didn't move like no man I had ever seen. Can't rightly say whether the one that held me or the giant bugs clicking at each other had me more unsettled, but I was sure I was done for nonetheless. Felt like that big old thing moved in slow motion almost, but it still hurt something awful when he slapped my body onto some sort of hard slab that groaned out of the ground before my eyes. Knocked the wind out of me too. When he stood back up, He looked like nothing more than a shadow again, but the mantis things moved in closer to where I was laying. One of them was holding some kind of chains or straps or something, and the other had some odd-looking tools of some kind. One of them looked kind of like some pliers my pops had in the garage, and the other reminded me of needles the doc would stick in my mama's arms. But they weren't made of no metal or glass I had ever seen. I was shivering from my head to my toes and squalling as loud as I could. I was sure no one or nothing could hear me, but I was screaming for help anyways. When I heard what sounded like a blade being sharpened from somewhere in the darkness, it dawned on me I still had my Bowie strapped to my belt. Pappy told me to always be extra careful when he had given it to me for Christmas, on account of the edge he had ground onto it. He shaved the hairs off his arms to show me how sharp it was. Sure enough, it left a shiny bald spot on his forearm in a second or two. As soon as one of the giant bugs put a strap across my chest, I pulled my blade and swiped it across its arms, or leg, or whatever the hell it held out. Whatever it was, I cut it short, and it let out a squeal like I ain't never heard. The other one came at me, and I stuck it with my blade too, carved into whatever sort of flesh it had, like a hot stick of butter. Both of them were hollering themselves now, and the big ol' one came reaching for me. As soon as I dodged to the other side, which weren't none too hard on account of how slow it moved, I heard a sort of muffled yell coming from outside of the room. It was hard to tell with it coming from where I supposed to be the outside world, but it sounded like someone was calling my name. I didn't see no doors or much of nothing else, and I couldn't tell what direction the voice was coming from, so I just screamed out, "I'm in here!" as loud as I could. I just kept hollering out the same words over and over while dodging the big guy and swatting at him with my Bowie. As soon as I ran the blade across the hand that had stretched out, causing it to squeal out in another unsettling sort of sound, I saw something else that damn near turned my hair white. Maybe 10 feet over the spot I was laying on when I come to, I saw a normal enough human-looking arm reaching through the sort of blue-glowing hole. The mantis, whose arms was a bit shorter now, was helping the other one back up from the floor, so I knew that I didn't have long. Without even thinking, I ran for the hole. I leapt for the hand, soon as I got within range, but I missed it and fell back onto the ground. I ain't sure if this makes any sense. Hell, I ain't sure if none of this makes any kind of sense. But that clicking sound was a lot more aggravated than it was before. They were both coming at me, and the big one was coming back into view from behind me too. The one I stuck wasn't moving fast, and neither was the shadow thing, but the other was charging pretty good. I jumped up again, but I couldn't get within a shout of the hand that was dangling down from elsewhere. I was gonna have to get a running start if I was hoping to get close enough. With the big shadow and the bugs on the other, I was running out of options. I just ran straight at the mantis that was charging me. I swung my blade from side to side, just hoping I could get it to back off. My pants were still soaked on the account of my bladder giving out, but my tiny legs were still scurrying like a mouse. Soon as the Bowie knife made contact with the gut of the giant bug, it hit the ground clutching at its middle. The other wasn't far behind it, but it stopped at its place when I was still waving the knife around like a madman. I saw the big shadow reach for the arm that was poking through the hole, so I didn't have no more time to waste. I just ran as fast as I could. When I got close enough, I jumped as high as my legs could take me. I grabbed onto the arm with both hands, letting my knife hit the ground. I didn't mean to drop it, but I didn't want to risk not holding on tight enough. And sure enough, I didn't want to poke it into what was trying to pull me out. Before I knew it, I was lying in the tall grass, panting and wheezing worse than I did the first time I smoked a cigarette. While I laid there catching my breath, my pappy pulled me in close, gripping me tight and not letting go. Soon I realized it was his arm that was poking through the doorway, between this place and the other. I got scared. He hollered at me for not listening. Seemed all he cared about at the time was that I was all right. I was still shaking all over and crying my eyes red. So was he, truth be told. I was saying I was sorry over and over, but he just held me tight, rubbing my back. I think he was trying to calm me down, but he was as tore up as I was. It was dark out by this point, so I didn't know how long I had been down there, nor how long he might have been looking for me. I figured he had gone home and seen the tackle box gone. Likely didn't take him too long to put together where I was off to. He was always a smart one, my pop. Once he had got me calmed down, he patted me on the back and told me to go on and get to my bike. I held up for a minute to wait for him, but he told me to get on home and he'd be there shortly. At first, I thought he was fixing to jump back down that hole and show those monsters a thing or two. But even as strong as my pappy was, I thought that'd be a bad idea. It wasn't until I got to the edge of the creek, when I looked back to see him watching me with a smile on his face. It wasn't his normal smile, though. He still had tears dripping down, but there was something else in his face I couldn't figure out. We just stared at each other for a minute or two before he just closed his eyes. Soon as it hit me what had happened, I charged back over to where he stood, rooted in place. I was maybe a few feet from him when he got pulled under. I dug around the ground where we had sat hugging and crying, but it was only dirt and grass. Weren't no sign of any sort of hole or entrance to the other place. I still clawed at the ground till my fingernails bent back and my skin tore. I was hollering and wailing again, but there was no sign of him where he had went. Seems whatever door he pulled me out of had closed soon as he went through it. I rode back home faster than I knew I could. Maybe took me half the time to get back that I had to get out to that creek in the first place. I told my mama what happened, and she was all kind of shook. She called the sheriff to come out, but I didn't know if he could help with something like this. He was an older fellow, like as old as I am now, but he didn't seem to think too kindly about going out to the Boulder Creek. He was pitching a fit and mama was causing a fuss too, so he finally gave in and headed up the trail with Deputy Mills. He was half the age of the sheriff, but he came off like his shit smelled pretty, looking down his nose at me and Mama as if we had no right to call him. Still, he didn't look none too thrilled about going up to that old creek neither. But the trail was wide enough for the car to get him close, for they'd have to go on foot the rest of the way. They wouldn't let me or Ma come with him, on account of being unsafe if a crime had been committed. I still wanted to go, but I couldn't leave Mama alone. She was all matter of upset, and I was still tore up myself. I didn't think they would ever know what to look for, but I didn't trust them to put a lot of work into looking. It was likely around midnight when they had came back, but they didn't turn nothing up. I figured they wouldn't, but they still had dried mud and dirt all under their fingernails, and was covering their shirt and pants. So it looked as though they at least tried, more than I thought they would have anyways. Both of them looked plumb rattled, and the deputy was as white as a ghost. They had me fill out some paperwork, but it read like I was all kind of crazy when I read it back. The sheriff told me he'd be getting a search party, and they would do what they could to find my pop, but they never did turn nothing up. Weren't no body found or nothing. It was like he just vanished from the earth altogether. He warned me never to go to Boulder Creek again. But I still would from time to time when my uncle would come down to take my mama into the city to see the doctor. I never found much of nothing either. But every now and then, when I would just sit still in the quiet of the place, I could swear I'd hear someone coming out from somewhere as far away. Could have just been my mind playing tricks, though. I always told myself I'd go up that ways again someday. It's my fault he got pulled down there in my place. I should have listened to him when he told me not to go there, but I was just too damn hard-headed to hear it. I knew I ain't got no one to blame but myself for what happened, but Mama never blamed me, not once. She mourned for my pop, but she still loved me with all her heart until it gave out. I still hold on to what hope that Pappy found my Bowie knife and hacked them things to bits before they could have strapped him to that slab. I know I left him hurting a good bit, but I don't know about that big old one. Nor whatever them little hands were neither. Could be, he's still down there looking for a way out. Even if he would be pushing 90 by now, he was the toughest some bitch I ever knew. He would have never went down without taking a few of them with him. I know this story likely sounds like the ramblings of a mad old man. Lord knows I've told you more than my share wild ones over the years. And I ain't got no doubt you knew that I was full of shit in most of them. You were always kind enough to play along when I spin the same old yarns time after time. And I can't thank you enough for that, kid. I was never the same after I lost my pop. And I suppose I still got a screw or two loose. But you never made fun or showed me no sort of disrespect. You're a good kid. And I appreciate you humoring me this one last time. With all the crap I've fed you over the years, I can neither ask nor expect you to believe this one to be true. But hand to God, this one might be the only truth I've ever told you. I ain't never seen no aliens, and I for damn sure couldn't fight off no armed robbers to save my life. But there are some things out there, kid, things that we're not supposed to ever meant to see or meet. I can't rightly say where that creek sent me that day, nor where my pappy ended up, but to this day, I still wish I had answers to it all. I'm sure I ain't got too many years left ahead of me, and I sure as hell ain't getting any younger. Always wondered what I'd find if I just kept digging, though I don't think there was so much under the earth as an underworld, somewheres under the surface of what we know to be. Maybe though, maybe I'll... We were interrupted by the graveyard shift coming in, and I never had a chance to find out where the sentence would lead. Before he headed out for the night, Truman clapped me on the shoulder and shook my hand. He said he was truly sorry for my loss, and told me to take care of myself. There was something more genuine in his voice than I had ever heard. Somehow, I think he knew that that'd be the last time I would see him. That one final story almost felt like a confession that he needed to get off his chest. And I feel proud that he entrusted those last words with me. He never handed in any notice, nor did he just outright quit the job that he had had for more than 20 years. He just didn't come in the next day, nor any that followed. There was no obituary, no funeral, simply no sign of where he went. But I had a feeling I knew what his destination would have been after he clocked out that one last time. His wife had died some years back, and his two sons had moved away after college. So nobody knew much of anything about where Daniel Truman's future carried him. Some time back, I considered taking a trip to his old homestead to look for answers. But I could find absolutely no information on the town of Rimrose Fall, let alone the creek that sat miles behind it. Maybe I just didn't look hard enough, or didn't entirely want to be tempted to follow on where such a quest would lead me. There are some mysteries out there that are best left unsolved. Still, as completely out there as his story was, I believe every single word to this day. It could be that he had just changed the name of the town to prevent me from temptation. Of course, it most certainly could have been no more than just another tall tale that he had told me that day. One last bizarre product of an imaginative mind. Just one more for the road. But I don't think so. Not this one. I like to camp and fish from time to time, but I never retreat to more secluded spots of the world anymore. Maybe I'm just a gullible idiot, or a little bit intimidated about the possibilities, but maybe not. Perhaps we are a little more than fish in a barrel to those who dwell underneath, should we be unfortunate enough to cross into their territory. I did purchase a fairly hefty Bowie knife for the next time I do take those trips out into the woods. Well, that along with my pistol. It never hurts to be prepared, after all. I truly hope that Daniel Truman is still out there somewhere, bending the ear of many who have grown as tired of his tales as I had at one time. For most I have crossed paths with over the years, I would wish them well, and hope that they find what they're looking for in life. But not Truman. I hate to think what he may have found, if he did go in search of it.